Grandstand Cricket.
The Cricket World Cup 2019.
And he bowls a ball that's heaved away. It's going out through square. Australia have emphatically won their fifth World Cup by 7 wickets. The Australian players rush out onto the field.
To celebrate, ABC Grandstand speaks to those who have etched Australia into cricketing history.
Klusner hits back past the bowler. There's a mix-up. Oh, there could be a run out. There will be a run out. Oh. It's a tie. Australia is in the final.
The protagonist behind Australia's 5 World Cup victories.
Catch. It's come off something, but that's extraordinary. He's Rudy Coates would give him not out, and Gilchrist is walking.
Host Ben Cameron retraces the path to World Cup glory.
Drives it, bowl! He's bowled it!
With the likes of Steve Waugh, Ricky Ponting, Alan Border, and many more.
A huge wicket for Australia.
Fleming in and bowls. Klusner hits back past the bowler. There's a mix-up. Oh, there could be a run out. There will be a run out.
Oh.
It's a tie. Australia is in the final. Australia is in a fourth, an unprecedented fourth World Cup final after an unbelievable tie at Edgbaston. Donald has been run out after an incredible, impossible to describe mix-up. South Africa all out, 213. The match is tied and Australia go to Lords and the final.
It's arguably the best one-day match ever played and the World Cup's most famous moment. Australia's tie with South Africa in the 1999 semi-final, echoing through the annals of World Cup history. In this episode of Legacy, you'll hear from the captain and the coach, Steve Waugh and Jeff Marsh, with the stories behind the scenes that shaped Australia's victory.
99 was tough. We went to Pakistan in August. We played a full summer in Australia, and then we went to the West Indies for a full tour. And I remember we had a week to 10 days off after the West Indies tour before the World Cup started. And the players all wanted to go home. We'd been on the road since August, and they wanted to go home for 10 days, but the cricket board said, no, look, you can't. It's too expensive, and what we'll do is we'll stay in Barbados. We stayed there for a week, and you can have a bit of a holiday there before you went to the West Indies. Well, I was coach at that stage, and I thought, well, trying to look after 15 blokes in Barbados leading into a World Cup is not exactly a great leader.
We just come off a long tour of the West Indies, so we're away 5.5 months. So it was, it's a long time to be away from home and family, and one or two players had children born while they're away, so there was a lot of stresses around the team. And we played poorly in the first couple of games. We lost, as you say, to New Zealand and Pakistan, and we only just got across the line, limped across the line against Scotland. That's how badly we were playing early on. But I think it was more the fact that we were the favourites, and we were so focused on winning the World Cup, we forgot about the process leading up to it.
To be honest, we had a really sluggish start. We could have lost the first game. We should have lost the first game. We slowly got momentum going through that World Cup and ended up winning it. So what we did was, instead of coming back to Australia for the 10 days, we stayed in Barbados.
Yep.
We stayed there for I think it was about a week to 10 days. And the boys just had a bit of a break there, and the wives came over and girlfriends, and not ideal, not when you look at the World Cup now. I think Justin's taking his boys to Gallipoli for the 10-day lead-up. Our World Cup lead-up was 10 days in Barbados, sitting on the beach trying to keep people busy. Yeah, they probably did have a few rums. I hope they did, because whatever it did, it worked.
And in fact, that is the last ball, because Wasim Akram bowls McGrath for a duck, second ball. There's no way the stewards can stop that invasion. The ground is covered in a sea of jubilant Pakistan support. Pakistan have beaten Australia by 10 runs with one ball to spare. McGrath is out, bowled Wasim Akram for naught. A sensational match in this World Cup has ended with victory for Pakistan. They still have maximum points. Australia will need to win their last two matches. And that match next Sunday at Old Trafford against the West Indies is going to be quite an occasion.
You had your struggles in 99, didn't you? I mean, you scraped past Scotland, you had losses to New Zealand and Pakistan, and then you started to build into the tournament, I mean, and get going from there.
Yeah, I think, we did. We were struggling, you know. I think the thing with our team in that year is, once we started struggling, the media really honed in big time on our senior players, you know, Glenn McGrath and Warney and the Wars. You know, they were really trying to put a bit of pressure on, and we realised at that stage that we weren't playing well and probably weren't as focused as what we should have been, and we just look. To be honest, the turning point to me in that tournament was a team meeting we had at Headingley, and it was just a real open one of those open team meetings. I threw it open to the players, and you know, just went round and had a chat. Every player had a chat, and it was just players being honest, saying that their focus is probably not where it should have been, and they needed to regroup, and you know, and probably had to start working a little bit harder. All the things that you talk about in all these team meetings, but it was really, you know, we had a very talented side and great players, but we just needed to get momentum going our way. And you know, from the day we walked to the, out onto the practice field that day for training, I could tell there was just a totally different team out there. And I think players stopped worrying about what people were writing about us and saying about us and reading and got focused on what was going to make us a very good team, and that's working hard at our skill. And to me, that was the real turning point.
We got back to saying, you know, let's start enjoying our cricket and playing it the way we've been previously playing and not get too far ahead of ourselves. Just really concentrate on the match at hand, relax, play our style of cricket we know we can do, and just... you know, really focus in on the task at hand instead of maybe getting a little bit you know, carried away about trying to win the World Cup and to leave this amazing legacy and to hold the trophy aloft at Lord's. I think we probably took our eye off the ball a bit.
But it was a rival player's inability to keep his eye on the ball that would radically change this tournament.
Klusner, and this is played away and he's caught, Steve Waugh, is he? No, he's dropped! Amazing by Gibbs. It seemed to go into his hands and fall out of them. And Klusner is just asking, now, didn't he hold on to it long enough? No, said Steve Waugh. Frankly, he didn't. The two of them are in the crease talking to each other. It seemed that Gibbs had it in his hand and then it tumbled out.
Well, I think he went to throw it. He did catch it, and then we're just watching the replay here now. And then out it comes. I think he's either going to throw it or throw it out.
That was extraordinary. He had it, and they're appealing to umpire Willie. How long have I got to hold on to it for? But well, you have to have, the law says, you've got to have command over its further dispersal, and he didn't.
Well, you've got to have control over it, didn't he? He had it for a split second sort of thing, and then it's come out.
So much of the 1999 tournament lives in those two matches against South Africa. The story goes that Shane Warne told the team that if you're caught by Herschel Gibbs, don't go, because he has a habit of not holding his catches. Did that happen?
Definitely true, in team meeting. We'd had a team meeting prior to the game, and the last thing before when we have a team meeting, I said, has anyone else got anything to say? And Shane, that's when Shane came out and said, guys, tomorrow if Herschel Gibbs takes a catch, don't walk. And he warned the players. He and said, look, he's... he doesn't hold him. And the next day, it's exactly what happened. And we all know what happened, you know, with the Herschel Gibb catch.
To tell you the truth, I can't remember 100% myself now, but I'm going with the story that people love, you know, that Herschel dropped the World Cup. I think it's part of cricket, and those stories are great to look back on, except I guess if you're Herschel Gibbs, he probably thinks, you know, it's not such a great story. And I'm thinking probably he's had 20 years of grief. Maybe we can sort of have a bit of an amnesty and let him off after this World Cup. But
you know, to say that he dropped the World Cup, well, yeah, it's harsh. He's a great, he's a scorcher. I can't say too many bad things about it. He's a terrific bloke, a terrific cricketer. And but it was just one of those situations that was freakish.
It was one of those moments where, you know, we'd sort of at each other a bit during the day, and we'd give Herschel a bit of stick as he went out to bat. And because he was mainly one day player at that stage, he wasn't playing test cricket, so we thought he was a bit soft. He wasn't playing test cricket, so we let him know, and then he went and played this amazing innings. He got a fantastic 100, so of course, then we went to go into bat. It was his turn to say a few things to us, which is part of the game, and it's what, you know, what we enjoyed about our cricket. It was, you know, a bit of give and take and a bit of banter, and all of a sudden, he was the one giving us a bit of banter. And then it's funny how fate works these things out, that he dropped that catch when I was on 56, and I gave him probably a bit of advice as he went past me mid-wicket.
Did Steve Waugh say to Herschel Gibbs, you've just dropped the World Cup?
There's no doubt. Steve Waugh would have said it. There's no doubt that Steve, that's the competitive, that's the backyard that Steve Waugh grew up in. Dog eat dog. In that innings that Steve, in that century that Stephen made in that game, when Hanty Cronje came on to bowl, he walked down and said, I'm going to have a piece of you today. And went bang, bang, bang. Hit him for a couple of sixes, and that's where it turned momentum really our way with that innings. There's a great partnership. I mean, Tom Moody played very well that game. Michael Bevan played well that game. Yeah, there's no doubt that Stephen would have had his little chip away there. Don't worry about that.
After you won that game in the Super Sixes, was there a feeling opposed to South Africa? We've got you guys here. We've got you mentally.
Yeah, well, definitely, because things had changed. From when we started the tournament and we were sluggish and we were... Our focus wasn't on actually what it should have been, and we had that meeting and it turned around, and you just knew that things were going our way. And the players we had in that side had a massive belief. They were great cricketers. Glenn McGrath, the Walls, Darren Lehman, Shane Warne, freaks. And we knew that if we could get their mind right, then we were going to be hard to beat.
That final game in the Super Sixes, which you alluded to in the Groundhog Day of playing South Africa again, how big was the mental aspect leading into that semi-final that we've got you guys, we've just beaten you in the way that you had in that last game of the Sixes, that, you know, whatever happens, we're going to be able to get you?
We certainly took some confidence, but I guess the reality of the situation was that South Africa were the form team in the World Cup. They were playing some outstanding cricket, and Kluivert was leading the way, so they were full of confidence. And, look, they expected to beat us at Headingley. They had us on the ropes there, and they would have been very disappointed that they let us escape, and probably worse for them that by escaping from that match, we had to play them again in the semi-final. So they could have put us out of the tournament. So they would have been ruining that fact and probably thinking about it, whereas we felt we had the great escape and there was no stopping us now. We had the momentum. So going to the semi-final, we felt good about it, but I think that the fact was that we were very mentally fatigued, and it took a lot out of us to win that match. Myself personally, I think it was only a two-day gap, and I was still extremely tired and fatigued from the effort of, I guess, getting across the line in that previous game. So that was another factor leading up to that match, that who was going to handle the pressure situation more, because we were both pretty tired and fatigued. And you can see that in the last half an hour of the semi-final, there was a lot of mistakes made. But, yeah, we probably went into that match, the semi-final, thinking, you know, this is our World Cup. We've had the great escape. It's meant to be.
That whole match against South Africa, how do you reflect on it, I guess, in an overarching sense?
Well, the whole week was a bit of a blur because we had that amazing escape at Headingley only a couple of days before that. So it was back-to-back games against South Africa. So it was almost like Groundhog Day when we turned up at Edgbaston. Again, we're in trouble with our batting. We needed a partnership in Michael Bevan and myself. So it felt like it was the same thing happening again. And we didn't get as many runs as the previous match. I think we only had 213, which, you know, was just a score, really. It was probably 20 or 30 at least short of what we needed to get. So we knew we had to do something special when we got out there in the field. And it was going to take a monumental effort. And obviously our bowlers really did a great job. And Shane Warne was very vocal leading up to going out in the field, and he was up for the challenge. And, you know, we got that first wicket. I think it brought Shane on in the first 10 overs. And once we got the first wicket, you could just sense that South Africa, even though it wasn't a big total, it was such an important match for them. And they had so much riding on winning the World Cup and leaving a bit of legacy for South African cricket that you just see that the pressure was almost too much for some of their players. And we got ourselves back into the game. And then it was just seesawing for the last hour and a half. Both sides made a lot of mistakes. We dropped a lot of catches. We missed some runouts. They played some pretty poor shots. But it was engrossing cricket because it was it was two highly competitive teams with a lot of really great players in the most pressurized situation, the semi-final of the World Cup. So it was fantastic to watch as a player. It was nerve-wracking to play in.
Yeah, Shane was the star, 4 for 29 off his 10 overs with four maidens in amongst all of that.
Warne bowls. This is Cullinan is bowled. A big slog over mid-wicket and he's lost his off stump. Warne stares down the pitch as he gets in now and bowls. Lots of flight there. It's the big sweep shot.
He's out. LBW.
Cronier is out. Warne gets two in and over.
Shane was terrific that day. I mean, Shane bowled well every game. He was a freak and no doubt one of the probably not the best one or two bowlers Australia's ever seen, or the world's ever seen. But yeah, definitely right. It was amazing the pressure that. I remember Steve moving into Silly Point there, and Hansi Cronje, and just putting that same pressure on Hansi as what he did the game before. Not only Hansi, but all their players. And again, it was the ability of pressure and for our guys to create pressure situation and take our opportunities. And, you know, when Shane bowls well, he is very, very hard to get away, especially if the ball was turning and if there was a little bit of pressure on at that stage of the game, which there was.
So it's a crazy ride to the final over of that insane semi. The first two deliveries off Damien Fleming go for back-to-back boundaries. You only have one run to play with. They need one run to win. What's going through your mind at that stage?
I'm thinking we're in real trouble here because Lance Klusner had an amazing tournament. He was a player of the tournament and he was in just in incredible form the whole way through. I don't think he missed a ball for the whole tournament. So I'm thinking, well, our chance is pretty much gone here. We're just, maybe we've got one more roll of the dice, but it didn't look that positive, and I was sort of hoping for the best of that situation.
I was out the back. I was out of my seat, and I was looking around corners. I was so nervous. I think everyone in the dressing room, but you're in the game because it was like so much. We should have won the game. Darren Lehman missed a run out underarm. He could have run him out earlier on, but he missed it.
Here it is. Fleming in and bowls, and Klusner hoiks at it, doesn't score a run. There might be a run out at the bowler's end. Lehman underarms, he misses. Donald might have been out. The ball was dragged to mid on by Klusner. Lehman onto it, had a go. Donald was backing up.
We're having a look at that replay. Lehman very close in at mid on, shies at the stumps, underarm. He'd have been out if he'd hit.
Well, another chance. Another one goes begging.
Klusner had such a good tournament, and that was the thing that stuck in my mind that worried me. The mix-up in the run was like pressure. That was the pressure of the game. You know, Alan Donald just stood there, didn't run. It was like, but, you know, it was brilliant. I mean, it was just the build-up and, to win that game was so good.
The late, great Richie Beno described Damien Fleming's underarm as one of the coolest, calmest and most composed things he's seen on a cricket pitch. It was quite brilliant, wasn't it? Because it would have been easy to turn, to fire away, maybe overthrow South Africa, get through and win. But he was very attuned to what he needed to do in that moment.
Yeah, it was. But there was so much happening at that stage. I mean, I was screaming in the dressing room, get it! And I didn't even know where it went. You know, like you see the ball moving and Flem, he talks about that a lot. But just it was just cool. And then Gilly, you know, like just take the ball and just a massive relief.
Fleming in and bowls. Klusner hits back past the bowler. There's a mix-up. Oh, there could be a run-out. There will be a run-out.
Oh.
It's a tie. Australia is in the final. Australia is in a fourth, an unprecedented fourth World Cup final after an unbelievable tie at Edgbaston.
Do you recall much of what the change rooms were like after that win against South Africa?
Well, it was when they came in, you know, obviously when you come in the dressing room after a win like that, I mean, the first 10 minutes is awesome. You know, it's like the pat on the backs and guys are just so happy and, all the other staff are in there and it's just relief. They're the great moments in sport, you know, that period of time when you win a close game, whether it be footy, cricket, car race, tennis, whatever it is. They're just great moments. But there was a cooling down period of we've got one more to go. We don't want to waste this performance and we're heading there against South Africa. We had to go to the World Cup. We had to go to Lords and finish the business.
And you did that pretty comfortably in the final, didn't you, against Pakistan, who you'd already lost to in the tournament?
Yeah, I think it was like going to Lords to play in a World Cup final was a dream of everyone's in the team. Hadn't come along for years and years and years, and you don't get that opportunity to do all that, to play in a final at Lords. And, you know, the opportunity to wake up in the morning to know that you get in the team bus and you drive to Lords and you go through the gates and you pull up at the back of the grandstand and you walk in, you go up the two flights of stairs and into the dressing room and you walk out onto that balcony and you look out on the ground and think, wow, this is the World Cup final we're playing in. And, you know, all those things are just great memories and great feelings, but you still got to do the job. Our boys were superb. They were on right from ball one and we bowled Pakistan out for bugger all. And then the run chase was like, I struggled to watch it. You know, it was like so nerve-wracking to think we needed, it wasn't many, every run, and Gilly was superb, and Gilly had a really tough tournament, but that day just bang, bang, you know, and the crowd cheered, and you knew you got four runs, and yeah, it was just a great feeling, you know, when the winning runs are scored, you're standing on the balcony at Lord's, and you know, it's just awesome.
What about in the aftermath of the win, Jeff? You'd now won one as a player in 87 and then as a coach in 1999. How did the feeling differ, or how was it similar as a player and a coach?
I think the thing with playing is you have more control over what's happening out in the ground, and you're out in the ground so you can have good input, even though AB reckons when the pressure is on, he could never find me out in the ground. So, but, you know, as a coach, you you do all the prep and you do all the training and you warm up and you hope you got them right. But once game day comes, captain takes over, and you just sit there and hope that, you know, the boys do the job. So both great wins, but to win at Lord's was special.
Wasimak run going down with the ship. In and bowls to War, lovely on drive, just teasing mid wicket out towards the boundary it goes, and it might just trickle. It does, out to the rope, and Australia need only four now, so it could happen to any ball. The field almost all up in the circle as Sucklane bowls around the wicket. Lehman gives himself room, hammers it through the covers, and Australia wins the World Cup of 1999. Its second World Cup victory.
And he bowls a ball that's heaved away. It's going out through square. Australia have emphatically won their fifth World Cup.
That's episode 2 of Legacy, as we recount Australia's World Cup victories. If you want to catch up on more iconic stories of Australia's World Cup success, check out Grandstand Sports Specials podcast channel or wherever you get your podcasts.